Lowe's knows how to help you save this 4th of July. Upgrade your laundry routine with the new and exclusive first-of-its-kind all-in-one vented laundry combo. Wash and dry in just 68 minutes. Save up to 40% on select major appliances. Plus, when you buy more, you save more. Shop Samsung this July 4th at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
Time for Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We got a good one for you. I'm excited about this podcast. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, and host of the show, that's me, and on the other line is Kurt Hoag, Brewers reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We got a lot to discuss. Very good series for the Milwaukee Brewers this weekend in Cincinnati. They win all three games against the team that they were chasing for first place in the National League Central just before the All-Star break. They now have a two-game lead in the Central. Huge weekend series. They win the tiebreaker, which we could talk about a little bit, and just great stuff from them. This, of course, was the same week as the All-Star game. The draft carried over into this week. We are looking ahead to the trade deadline. We've got to get through some of that stuff. So that is coming here on this episode of Microbrew. And at the end, when I'm all done with Kurt, which could be a long time from now, based on what I'm throwing out here, we will have a pretty sizable conversation with one Eric Kratz, former Brewers catcher. You might find him on YouTube. He's got a show, Foul Territory, that runs 5 days a week talking baseball. He's kind of like the upcoming Pat McAfee of baseball, in my opinion. But of course, you remember him as a catcher for the Brewers in the 2018 run to the NLCS. We talked about that. He has a new book. He and Tim Brown sort of conspired on this book. Tim Brown did the writing, but Eric Kratz, a prominent piece in this book, his life story, and kind of just, it's called The Tao of the Backup Catcher, and just goes into kind of Kratz's life and also his philosophies on things. It's super interesting. So we're going to get into that. Long intro. Kurt, are you prepared for this podcast, for this episode of Microbrew?
I am so prepared. I have a Google Doc up, which that to me is the pinnacle of preparedness.
Yes, I agree. Google Doc does imply that you've done some homework. I have a notepad file. That's the best I got. But before we get to the trade deadline stuff, which is obviously still a couple weeks away, we got names. We're going to go through some names here. We are ready for names. We need to talk about this series in Cincinnati. Crazy good in terms of results. The Milwaukee Brewers pitching staff delivers a dominant performance. They rattle off the second and third of three consecutive shutouts against Cincinnati. Back-to-back 1-0 wins, both before and after the All-Star break. Then a 3-0 win that was a one-hitter. Corbin Burns was great on Friday. Freddy Peralta was great on Saturday. The bullpen was nails. The Piguero, Piamp, Williams triumvirate gets through completely unscathed on both Friday and Saturday, and then Williams comes back for a third consecutive save on Sunday as the Brewers rally for a 4-3 win. They get the sweep. They shut down the white-hot Cincinnati Reds and have overtaken them in the NL Central. Kurt, we will talk about the specific takeaways, but I think we should start with the good, because there's still some stuff we want to talk about that's, you know, could be better, I guess, despite the celebratory nature of this particular series. The pitching was so elite. We know these three bullpen guys have been this good all year, and they continue to show it. I think for me, seeing Corbin Burns and Freddy Peralta at their absolute, absolute best is such a good sign coming off the break. You know, Burns did not pitch in the All-Star game this week, and he came out that first game after the break and was awesome, probably as good as you're going to see him. And then Freddy Peralta, who just hasn't had an outing like that. He didn't have a blow-up inning. He did shut down. He gave up a fluky infield single and nothing else, you know, a couple walks. But those two guys at their absolute best, super encouraging. Obviously, the shutouts, you know, you don't necessarily want those to be tense, very close shutouts. That's what they got, but they still got wins because their pitching was so good. I still think, Kurt, if Burns and Peralta are that good, then the Brewers are a bona fide contender. I don't know if you believe that or agree with me, but what you saw from them and what you think of them at this point, give me your thoughts about the arms race for the Milwaukee Brewers.
That was the Milwaukee Brewers that we expected to see most of the year. Now, the pitching's been pretty good, but it hasn't been, you know, consecutive lights out outings from the top of the rotation pretty much all year. So, I mean, you start there. That's as good of a sign as you could draw up to kick off the second half for the Brewers. I feel like, JR, we have talked about how the stuff of Burns and Peralta throughout the first half did not match the results. Like, Freddy Peralta's stuff was as good as it's ever been. Corbin Burns was on the same level as it's been when he's been the best pitcher in baseball, and the results were never just were never strung together consistently for either. In the first half, there was reason to believe that they could turn the corner. Some of us in this podcast right now, in this podcast room, JR, some of us believed it so much that we traded for a rental version of Freddy Peralta in Dynasty Baseball, actually.
Oh, interesting.
Gave up a little Emmett Sheehan action to get Freddy Peralta for the stretch run here.
Yo, I have Ellie De La Cruz on my fantasy team, and that felt great until he went 0-for-12 against the Brewers this weekend. What happened there?
The Brewers, this is a bit of a digression, but... I was on vacation, JR. You were bragging about your Hawaii vacation recently.
Yeah,
but let me tell you, I was also on a beach this last week. I was on the Outer Banks of North Carolina, and we took a nice cruise, a sunset cruise on a boat, on a ship. And one of the people sitting in our general vicinity was a Reds fan and was lamenting how the Reds were a good team but could not figure out the Brewers. And I'm guessing he feels even worse now, about 4 days later. The Reds have been a great team, especially for the last month and a half, and they can't figure out the Brewers. Like, they've probably lost more games in the last 6 weeks against the Brewers than everyone else combined, right? Have to.
I think so. They're 2-8 against Milwaukee since the start of June when they first played the series. They will wrap up their season series later this month. So I want to say they were at 6 losses against everybody else. And you'd have to fact check me on that. But
I'm going to fact check you on this once I'm done talking. But the pitching, JR, yes, it was good.
It was good. Analysis.
To put a bow on it nicely, the pitching was incredible. Yeah.
I'm more interested in Peralta, to be honest. I mean, Burns, we know, is not for a year now, has not been that elite lethal Corbin Burns. But we've seen some really good flashes lately with really his last 3 starts. You know, he had the perfect 5 innings to start against Pittsburgh shortly before the All-Star break. And, but Peralta, to me, had been, you know, the weak link in the rotation, if we're being honest. Even though you saw the stuff, you saw the flashes, it didn't feel like he was bad by any means. It felt like he could absolutely shut you down for 4 or 5 innings at a crack. He doesn't work deep into games. That's kind of always, that's been his thing for a little while. It's not that he's a 7-8 inning pitcher. And that might be a problem down the line, but it was always like the home run, like, and it would be, you know, 2 walks and a dinger. Like it always felt like it was a 3-run homer or a bad 2-run homer with a 1-run lead, you know, just really hurtful home runs. And so I don't know if you can see one start and say, oh, well, he's fixed, because in this particular start, he did not give up a home run. He barely gave up any hits at all. Are there any peripheral numbers that sort of confirm this, that say, you know what, don't worry, Freddy Peralta is still in there. The results haven't necessarily been there. But he's still got that. I don't know if that's true, because I've seen a lot of stats and they seem to indicate that he's below average this year, well below average. So was there anything you were hanging your hat on to suggest that he's still got that stuff? You just have to let it, you know, he just has to like get, I don't know, luckier or just not give up that key home run pitch once in a while.
Yeah. I don't know about peripherals, like being super positive on him. I don't know about like some of the, like stuff plus is one that's interesting, like command plus, but I don't know even where he was on those. I would venture to guess not great. Maybe the stuff plus would be good, but the peripherals are not going to be generally in his favor, because he's just giving up tons of home runs and tons of fly balls. And that's because he's putting a lot of pitches in really bad spots, and it tends to be with runners on base. But I think the thing that you could always hang your hat on was not only like I said, the velocity was great. The breaking pitches were sharp. The curveball and the slider were good. Like the changeup, I guess his last outing was really good, but before that, it hadn't been superb or anything. But like, you gotta hang your head on that, and the fact that you've seen him be really, really good before, and you've seen him go through up and down stretches. So I'm not saying his second half's totally fixed, but it in every start had just been one inning, like 1 or 2 batters, a walk, a bloop hit here, and then a big bang bong 400 feet to left field. And so it was kind of nice, I guess, to see, you know, if you're a Brewers fan, you see one start where he avoids that beginning. I think you'll need to see a couple before it feels like, okay, he's settled in. But yeah, the base for a really, really good second half was there. He looks really healthy, and that's a big thing.
The bullpen, meanwhile, was about as elite as it can get. Devin Williams, like we said, decided not to pitch in the All-Star game. He was basically scratched, went to Seattle, but was determined he would not play. I don't know whose call that was. That might have been Devin's. It might have been the team's. It might have been collaborative. I don't know. But the dude obviously was then fully available for this weekend series and pitched in all three games and locked down very close saves. A couple one runs. I mean, you could argue that the 3-0 wasn't, but then he worked through that one on 8 pitches. So he just sliced through some very good Reds hitters. McLean, I think De La Cruz is in that inning. So, I mean, truly elite stuff, truly dominant stuff. Piguero and Piamp are the two big stories of the year at this point. Piguero, a guy that was in that Hunter Renfro trade. Piamp, part of the William Contreras, Esteury Ruiz exchange. You know, at that point, the larceny continues to look like bigger and bigger larceny the way that Piamp has pitched. And Hobie Milner was really good on Sunday. So, like, the bullpen to me still feels like, and we've talked about, there are cracks in that bullpen. There is a drop-off in terms of effectiveness after you get past that first shelf. But, you know, that's what the trade deadline is for. You know, you add a guy or two. Maybe it's Justin Miller finally getting healthy after Tommy John surgery, a guy that they signed in the offseason. Maybe it's him getting ready as a left-hander and becoming a valuable part of it. Maybe it's adding a guy or two. But, you know, I feel like this bullpen could not be more loaded for bear at this point, especially as they're going to get into, you know, especially if they do get into the postseason. This is a very tough stretch coming up. Phillies, Braves are involved, more Reds. Like, this is going to be really, really, you know, rugged part of the schedule. So I think the bullpen's going to be tested mightily. But, man, Kurt, they are on one right now. They look fantastic. I have nothing even more to say. They're just really, really good right now. What do you have anything more to say?
The bullpen, I have this to say. The bullpen was second in win probability added in the first half, which really? I think is like we've talked about this stat before. It's not a,
yes.
It's not an amazing suspect stat, but for a bullpen, it's that's pretty indicative of, like, they've been really good. Especially at the back end. I would use that stat over entire bullpen ERA. The Brewers' overall bullpen ERA, I don't think, is great. They've kind of cycled through those last couple of spots, and no one's been good, really, in like the 6, 7, 8 bullpen spots. So, but the top five, JR, I'm sure I could look this up on StatHead, but to have five relievers who have been here all year with an ERA under 3, that they've it got to be the only team that has that, right?
I mean, I don't know, but that's wild.
It feels like that's a really hard thing to... I guess Piguero has not been here literally all season.
All year,
but
no.
He's been here since the middle of April and thrown 37 innings. So if you got five guys who have all thrown over 30 innings and have ERAs under 3, like, that's pretty good. And Piguero and Piamps just looked so nasty. Like, that's... It wasn't just that they got through those innings on Friday and Saturday. They were untouchable. And then, meanwhile, Hobie Milner apparently owns Ellie De La Cruz, like, very quietly over here with a 2-3 ERA, two big innings on Sunday, big, big innings. Apparently, they had Devin available, and Piamps and Piguero were not. Wilson had already pitched. So it was going to be a delight of an eighth inning if Milner had not gotten 6 outs. I'm actually kind of curious to see who they would have gone to with a one-run lead.
Oh, it would have been Abner. Abner Uribe, baby.
You don't think it would have been Mejia?
You know, flip a coin. I have no idea.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
That's about what it comes down to. So yep. Who wants this inning?
It's only two, Hobie. Hobie, can you do this, please?
There's only two of them available, right? Like,
yeah.
I think they're still at 7 in the bullpen, so yeah. Also, bullpen has been good in summation.
Yes, and you get the Piguero Piamp Williams finish in 3 straight games, because they did the same thing in the 1-0 win against the Reds on the last game before the All-Star break that Sunday. They went 9-up, 9-down. They went 9-up, 9-down again on Friday with that triumvirate. And then, you know, I think Piguero allowed a walk, but they didn't allow any hits. They went, like, I think 9 out of 10 on Sunday. So, or on Saturday rather. So just sensational stuff. I mean, like you said, and WPA again, for those who don't, you could boil it down this way: this bullpen, in those high leverage moments, in the moments where, you know, where it's do or die, and the biggest moments of the game that could completely swing the outcome, this bullpen has come through better than any other bullpen in the league in baseball. So, very encouraging stuff from them, and a testament again to their offseason work. You know, we're, I think, critical, and we will be in a second on the offense, perhaps again, about some of their offseason work to bolster this team, but Piamp and Piguero are two revelations, so it certainly worked out that way. Okay, but let's talk about the offense, because as good as I want to feel for this weekend series, I still am left a little concerned. I mean, the Reds pitching staff, even through all their success, the Reds starting pitching staff in particular, Really bad. Terrible. Now, they faced Andrew Abbott twice in this stretch. He was doing sensationally well. The Brewers hit him as well as anybody has, so I don't want to say that they were just facing, like, batting practice all day. But the Reds pitchers have not been good. And the Brewers won these games, so I can't complain. I feel like I'm logging a petty complaint. But 1-0, 1-0, 3-0, 4-3. Some late drama, clutch hitting. I'm not going to dispute it. But that's a very small margin of runs. That's what, 8-9 runs in 4 games against one of the lesser pitching staffs in baseball, even as good as they've been and as many games as they've won. So that just highlights, I think, for me further, how much this offense lacks. And they caught a couple bad breaks here. Rowdy Tellez, who went on the injured list just before the All-Star break, it looked like he was going to be back in a very short order. Kind of a freak injury during shagging fly balls before Saturday night's game, tears up his finger really badly. He's now going to be out for almost a month. He's been struggling mightily all season, no question. Obviously, you still kind of want him back because they don't have any first baseman on the roster. So they lose him. Brian Anderson, back issues. So they lose another corner infielder, third base, right fielder, whatever, wherever you want to put Brian Anderson, probably third base, and you lose him. So they're down a couple guys. But neither one of those guys are world beaters because they don't have world beaters. They've got Christian Yelich, who's awesome still, William Contreras, who's been very good, Willy Adames seem to be finding it. And then what? You know, like nothing. So I think we're still seeing the same problems. Designated hitter spot, you know, Jesse Winker coming into Sunday. One of the 5 worst designated hitter seasons ever, looking at guys who have that many plate appearances and play primarily, I think 85% of the time, as the DH, like Jesse Winker does. Just like, it's astounding to me that they don't want to fix that. They're batting him cleanup, you know, against the team with whom you're fighting for first place. Like, why are they doing that? Owen Miller is not a cleanup hitter nor a first baseman. He's a fine player to have on your roster, but he hits the ball about as lightly as anyone in baseball, bottom 5% among qualified hitters. And he got really good breaks early in the season. He does have a penchant for putting the ball in play. I have to give him that. But since like the middle of May, or June 1st, he's got an OPS under 600. He's not a cleanup hitter nor a first baseman. So my blood is starting to boil a little bit, Kurt. I'm going to bring it back a little bit. I'm going to be calm. This offense needs boosting, and whether that's the trade deadline or not, I don't know. It needs something. And I am concerned, Kurt, going into this stretch here, that the Brewers are really going to face a reckoning because this offense just does not seem to put it together. Am I being unfair? They've won 4 in a row. I'm being maybe a little unfair, right?
Is there anything you want me to add here?
I didn't realize I was going to hop on top of a soapbox there. I didn't mean to, but you know, this is not, this offense is not good enough. Like, they will never be good enough with this lineup, is my opinion.
I was going to say eons ago, when I first started preparing my response to you here.
Sorry. I was
going to leave it pretty simple too. I was just going to say, yeah, they swept, they're playing great baseball. Their record says they're good, but this offense, JR, is bad. Like, I don't want to sugarcoat it just because they swept the Reds this weekend. They entered the day second worst in the National League in weighted runs created plus, WRC plus at 89.
Is that for the whole year?
For the whole year. They're 11% worse than league average. And that was with a good stretch to end the first half too. So they had been much lower than that as well. I don't need a whole lot of other stats to put on top of that. Like, you've seen it, you've watched it. The offense has been bad. Jesse Winker cannot be hitting cleanup. That's something that just can't be happening. It's been a functional offense. Like, they've functioned enough to win games, but say they lost, 3-2 on Sunday, they don't get that eighth inning rally. Then you're looking at a game where the entire offense was once again Christian Yelich, and that's kind of a microcosm of how it's been.
Totally.
Christian Yelich has been good. Some other guys have been okay. Some timely hits here, but that's not a way to build a sustainable winning offense. Like, now you're starting to think of this team like a bit of a playoff team, really. I mean, they're basically 3 games up in the division. You expect that team to make the playoffs, especially with the pitching pedigree that they have. But this is not a playoff caliber offense. Now, maybe some guys perform better. Willy Adames, who knows about Rowdy Tellez now. There's a whole bevy of guys that could perform better. But it is not a good offense. The numbers just back it up. It's not.
Yeah. Jesse Winker struck out again a couple times on Sunday. One of it was not his fault. Edwin Jimenez, the home plate umpire, has some work to do before he's a good home plate umpire, it seems.
He had a bad day.
He had a bad day. I mean, he might be a fine umpire. I don't know. I mean, whatever. Like, it was just a terrible game. Both ways, Jesse Winker victimized at one point there, and he had a big double. But when I say he's one of the five worst, he's fifth worst by OPS, which is a crude metric to some degree. You know, OPS plus, he's not quite bottom five or anything all time, but like, again, and we've talked about this, you know, this Brewers team is built a little bit around defense, as it should. That's good. Bryce Terang and Joey Weimer are not offensive difference makers at this point. It's okay. We've seen them both, and certainly in this series, both do good things defensively. So with those two guys in the lineup, you need to get offense from other places, understandably. Your corners have been completely lacking. That's a place where you need offense. And Jesse Winker doesn't provide, we talked about this time and time again, there's no defense here, there's no base running, they have to pinch run for him in key situations today, or Sunday, I keep saying today, Sunday was a good example. I mean, they can't keep going with him here. Like, he can't be on this roster if they want to make a serious playoff push. Like, I just don't think the turn of the corner is coming. And I would say that the way the roster is built, you can't afford it. You got to find somebody else to be your DH. Inside or outside the organization, I don't know. And I mean, Owen Miller's a good player. Like, you don't want to throw him away. Like, he's capable of playing a bunch of positions. He's had a pretty, I would say, decent year, and he's been good in stretches. He had a homer on Saturday. Like, he's has value. He's just not a first baseman slash cleanup hitter or number five hitter or whatever it is. Like, they got to make a move here. They have to figure something out here to add offense. And, you know, it's hurt them that Luis Urias has really struggled. He got hurt on opening day and has not been the caliber of guy who can come up and be a major league third baseman at this point. And that's hurt them. I mean, Keston Hira is still in the minor leagues. They've got other options in the minor leagues, but I think it's about getting somebody in from the outside. And it feels to me like that has to happen soon. It can't wait until the bitter end here, the trade deadline. Although now I guess we're 2 weeks away. It's getting a little bit more negligible between here and there, but they have got to do something. What is your long-term impression of what happens with Rowdy Tellez? This injury is obviously a big variable, but he was struggling so badly, and I don't know if you attribute that to the forearm injury that put him on the injured list in the first place, if you attribute that to a slump, or if you kind of just look at those peripherals that he's put up through his career and say, he's okay, but he's never going to be more than okay. And for a team, again, that needs those corners to do something, this isn't going to be enough. I put right field in that corner situation too. Right field has been a black hole offensively. You can't have three black holes on your offense when second base and center field are purely there for defense. So what do you think happens with Rowdy next? What would you expect is next for the Brewers first baseman?
That is a great question. I don't want to give away too much of my answer. I guess it'll be given away in a little bit later. I will give it away now. I think the Brewers, first base is a position they're going to have to address at the deadline. I do not think it is wise to go forward with Owen Miller for 4 weeks and then hope Rowdy Tellez figures it out after that. And if not, it's Owen Miller again at first base. Like, Owen Miller's been a good player for them this year, at least solidly above replacement level. He is not a cleanup hitter. He's not going to provide enough offense for first base. But he's not to take away from Owen Miller. He's been, again, very good. But you just need a different option. And Rowdy Tellez is an interesting hitter to me because the way I think of it is, like, he's one of the few guys where I feel like his game power almost exceeds his raw power, if that makes sense. You know, you look at a lot of guys like scouting, you know, he might have like 70 raw power, but only 50 game power because he just doesn't know how to tap into it. Like, a guy like Garrett Mitchell has a lot more raw power than he taps into in a game setting. Rowdy Tellez does not have he does not hit the ball incredibly hard. For as much power as he has, he's never a guy that has scalded the baseball. He's never had like a great command of the strike zone. The swing and miss has gotten worse this year as well. I think the pitch selection has gone down as well. Also, so that being said, you would not expect him to be as bad as he was for the last month and a half if healthy. But considering what you've seen, I think the Brewers would be wise to look elsewhere, and then, you know, maybe Rowdy Tellez is a solid DH option down the stretch. It certainly could be a room for him if he produces. But it's a spot they should look at, which we will get to in, I don't know how long now, a few minutes.
Yeah, sounds like that's a tease for Kurt Blanch, right, later on?
Yeah, that's a tease for Kurt Blanch. It's a tease for our trade deadline chit chat. We can just keep teasing that thing.
Yeah, let's just do this. Let's just talk about the trade deadline. I have nothing else to say about this. Was a short series, obviously, a short week.
Yeah, no, let's go into it. We've teased it enough.
All right, let's do it. So we last year threw out a million names, kind of hoping that one of them would end up being a player the Brewers traded for. Just to say, we were 0 for the podcast. We did not name a single name that the Brewers traded for. Now, granted, did we think the Brewers were going to trade Josh Hader for several players from San Diego? Of course not. No one knew that. That would be crazy. We would have said that out loud and laughed at ourselves.
To be fair, I mean, I guess Matt Bush maybe was a name.
Yeah, that Matt Bush was maybe someone.
But he still had like 3 years of control left. I did not think the Rangers would be trading him. So outside of that, if Matt Bush was the only one that like kind of could have come up, unless you thought the Brewers were going to be trading for Taylor Rogers, the closer on a contender, or Trevor Rosenthal.
Or injured Trevor Rosenthal.
I don't know if you knew. Yeah, I don't know if you knew this, Jared, but he had not pitched in like 2 years.
That's correct. And still had the best war.
Little discussed fact.
The best war of any reliever acquired at the deadline for the Milwaukee Brewers.
In the last two years. You could say the last 3 years, technically, I think, because they didn't trade any for anyone.
Tied with the Nelson Lamet.
Let's
get rid of those. Let's move on from those vibes.
Let's get rid of them.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're just going to throw out some names. We're going to go back and forth. It's going to be like a draft. We're going to draft 5 names each, and we'll see who wins in terms of point value. We shouldn't even do point value. If either one of us gets a name, we're probably going to win this thing, so we don't need to be too dramatic about it. But we could just go back and forth. We've done a little looking around, seeing who's in it, who's out, who's likely to sell. And we've got some good possibilities for the Milwaukee Brewers. I think most of them, I would say, are realistic. They're not just... Oh, Max Scherzer, Lucas Giolito. I think it's mostly realistic. So go ahead, Kurt. I'm going to let you kick this off on this draft. You go ahead and give me your first name.
Yeah, the 5 most likely players we think the Brewers are going to trade for. In order, right? From 5, least like 5 is least of the most likely.
I think you should start with the most likely because it's going to get awfully confusing as I rank my guys.
Okay. So 5, the most likely player we think they're going to trade for, and then really what it's going to come down to is at the end we're going to rattle off like 6 more names each really quickly, and then just so we can claim at the end that we were correct.
We're going to do like we did last year, where we just start randomly like Tourette's saying some names just in between sentences and see if any, and then we immediately claim that we had the analysis to prove it or something like
and
that.
We still didn't get anyone. That was an immaculate effort by us last
year. We said so many names.
Josh Bell.
Josh Bell. We should try maybe this year. Give me your first name.
That Josh Bell, which by the way reminds me that I did not look at any Washington Nationals, so I guess I'm not having them on the list.
My first guy is a Washington National, actually.
There's some guys on there. The most likely player that I think the Milwaukee Brewers trade for is Tommy Pham.
Okay.
He crushes lefties. This guy they're familiar with. He's played in the outfield this year, not well, but he can DH as well. Tommy Pham, yeah, he's a rental. He's a free agent at the end of the year, so I think that would make a whole lot of sense.
All they have to do is just get a little bit better at the corners and in right field, and they will be so much better. They don't have to get a superstar. Their pitching, at least certainly the pitching we saw this weekend, but even in general, their pitching is okay. It's good enough. Brandon Woodruff is going to be, we think, at some point in, someday, coming back from the injured list.
Probably.
They will be good enough, but it's not going to require Jackson Churio or Jacob Mizorowski to get an upgrade at these positions. They're already so far down, it's not going to take much. So Tommy Pham is not a sexy name. Most of these names are not sexy, but that would be an immediate impact. Now Pham did recently have an injury situation, so I don't know what's up with that. Lot going on with the New York Mets.
Oh, is Tommy Pham hurt? I did not bother to look that up.
Actually, my first name is somebody who's hurt, but very recently.
Oh, right groin tightness. He's fine. He'll be fine.
Okay, sounds good. My guy left with a thumb injury a couple nights ago, so we'll see what's up. But this guy is honestly, the biggest obvious no-brainer on the list, and that's Jamer Candelario from the Washington Nationals. Mm-hmm. He is a corner infielder who can play both first or third. He is a switch hitter. Now, typically in his career, he hits left-handed pitching very, very well. That has not been the case this year, so it's a little bit of an enigma. But he is a guy that could slot in at any of these spots that we're talking about. He is a free agent after this year. He's 29 years old, still has a lot of pop. He's going to be a hot item on the trade deadline on the trade market. You maybe haven't heard of him, but he is going to be one of the names that gets bandied about the most. He plays for Washington. They're not in anything. They're going to be selling parts again. So he makes the most sense for me, bar none. Like, there's a huge gap between one and two. I just don't know if the Brewers, if they get in a bidding war of any kind, if they're going to continue to stay in it and be willing to give up higher level prospects for a guy who's only going to be here for a couple months. So that's the first name off the top of my head. I don't think they get him because I think somebody else is going to be a little more desperate than they are.
I think if we were ranking best fits, he would certainly be at the top of mind. But I didn't look up the Nationals, but I did actively leave him off simply because I do not think the Brewers will be the team that wins the Jamer Candelario bidding.
Yeah.
I think there's like similar kind of guys elsewhere that won't be the biggest bat. I guess maybe not the biggest bat in the market, but he's one of them for sure. All right. I'm going to go with my number two player here. And who do I want to take? I got a few guys listed. You know what? I'm going to stick with a similar player as the last one I listed. This is going to be a common theme. Right-handed hitting outfielder on a rental deal, Randall Grichuk from the Rockies. He's had a very good year, somewhat quietly, and he can play multiple outfield spots. Again, that will lift up your corner outfield, right field spot immediately. I figure there'll be some interest in him from other teams as well, but that would be, I don't want to say that's a big bat, but it's got like a 112 OPS plus. Relative for the Brewers, that would be a big bat.
Yeah, I agree with you. Now, how about a guy that's even better than that? A 121 OPS plus. That's Brandon Drury. He plays for the Angels.
Is that your name?
That is next on my list. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's another guy who can play multiple positions. He's played a lot of second base, but he can play first base. Maybe other places on the infield. I'm not sure. I mean, he has played third base before. He played there last year. He was acquired by the Padres last year. The Padres acquired a couple guys including Josh Hader, that I think the Brewers could have used last year. Not even Juan Soto variety, but a few names. Josh Bell was in there as well. But I think it just depends what the Angels are going to do. You know, they're in this weird place with Ohtani, and obviously Mike Trout is now injured, and it's very difficult to know what they're going to do, if they're going to move Ohtani. I'm guessing they don't. They might try to like make some trades around the edges, and Brandon Drury would be that guy. You know, he's slugging 500 this year. He's an 822 OPS. He's a solid player, and he definitely fits. Again, we might be talking more about fit than what would actually come to pass. He's signed through 2024 on a very reasonable 2-year deal. I mean, that could easily work for the Brewers this year and next. So I think he's 30 years old. I think the Brewers would love to have him, but again, I don't know what the Angels are going to do. So that could be a wild card.
He does have a shoulder injury and is not progressing as quickly as hoped, but I mean,
yes,
by the deadline.
That is a problem. Yep, that's a problem.
The deadline is 2 weeks from now. Shoulder injury, it's not like a tear. It's a bruise, basically, some inflammation or something. So he can get past that. But yeah, to your point, the Angels and the Red Sox are the two teams I'm kind of very interested from a Brewers standpoint of seeing like what those teams do. They have a lot of guys the Brewers could use. A lot of guys. Brandon Drury is certainly one of them. I think the 2-year deal might maybe scare the Brewers away. Who knows? Maybe they were in the bidding for him this offseason. And also perhaps that would give the Angels reason to hang on to him. I think the Angels should trade Shohei Ohtani. I do not have Shohei Ohtani on my list.
No.
That would be a lot of fun, though.
That would change our world, man. That would be. Would that be bigger than Sabathia?
I mean, yes,
it would be bigger than Sabathia.
I have not mentally wrapped my mind around like the circus that it would be covering Shohei Ohtani on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So
overall, it would be bigger than Sabathia. I was thinking of like that first game, but even that would be another galaxy.
Yeah. I don't think I'll be able to wrap my mind around what covering that would be like. But I have held off on the Red Sox so far, the guys I have listed. Because I'm not sure what they're going to do, but I think in the end, the combination of, I think they trade plus there's a couple of guys that if they do are have Brewers all over them, I'm going to cheat. I'm going to name two. They're kind of like the same player. They actually are similar to the same player that I've listed already. You might again, continue to see a theme here. Rob Refsnyder and Adam Duvall. They mash lefties. They play in the outfield. I think Refsnyder plays in the outfield. Refsnyder really hits lefties like really hard. I've been surprised kind of watching him from afar
recently. Ref Snyder has a year and a half of team control left. I believe it's arbitration. Brewers could bring him back for another year. Adam Duvall's a rental, a name that I thought they, you know, probably should have had some more interest in to play right field. This offseason, he's been really good when healthy. If the Red Sox trade, those are two guys the Brewers should absolutely target.
I think if the Brewers do want to add a reliever, you know, I am not 100% convinced they will, even though that's just been the MO year after year after year. So we all assume they will add a reliever, and we probably still should. But with Justin Wilson, you know, a long tenured veteran who's done pretty well in his rehab starts, very well in his rehab starts, left-hander, a guy that they signed for this moment, you know, they've kind of been prepared to add him. I think it's at least plausible that they don't go all in and that they pool all their resources for the bats, because that is clearly what they need. I could see them maybe doing that. But if they do go reliever, then they should go a guy who's really going to make a difference, not a guy around the edges. You know, have it just be hammers, so that they can really do this in the playoffs. So I'm gonna try maybe Kendall Graveman, who's with the Chicago White Sox. He'd make $8 million next year. He's 32 years old. So $8 million is not nothing when you're talking about a relief pitcher. But he is a guy who has had some pretty good success in recent years. Now this year is pretty solid. I would say. I mean, he's got a 3.07 ERA, a WHIP under 1.18. I think you'd live with that. His FIP is a little high. I mean, it's probably not like it's not his best year by any means, but he's still well above average. I think that you're going to want to get an impact guy. He's a right-handed pitcher. Again, he's still pretty young. I think that they should go in and really, like, you know, don't just get some light. I think between their AAA and their big league team, they can figure out how to fix those holes with those like low leverage guys that have not fared well this year. You just don't invest in that. Just figure it out with Justin Wilson and whatever else. Go big and get Kendall Graveman if you're going to get a relief pitcher.
So again, I just don't think that's the guy the Brewers are going to get. Like the $8 million price tag for a reliever, that's not something they've done. Like Hader probably got that much at the end.
Right, but that's for next year.
At the tail end of arbitration. I know, but they would still...
We're not guaranteeing him a roster spot next year.
They would still be paying him $8 million next year unless you can find a trade partner, I guess.
Correct.
If that's what they want to do. But like since Gagne, I don't know if they've paid anyone. Like Gagne and Hader, are those the only guys that have gotten that much in franchise history as relievers? K-Rod,
maybe? Do you think one year, $10 million for Gagne, it just isn't that bad. But like, did it spoil a generation of relief pitching market for the Brewers?
Inflated for this, like this current market? It's pretty bad.
I mean, it definitely did not work out.
That's and they have pretty been... bad for the cap. They shot their shot. You got to give Doug Melvin this. When he wanted to shoot his shot, he shot a shot. Although that might have been, I was going to say it might not have been that entirely Doug Melvin on that signing.
That could be. I don't know.
But I was very young into it.
So he engineers the Sabathia knowledge. Trade later that year. So everything is like all that's ends well.
It could have been some exterior pressure to sign a capital C closer there. Anyway, I'm going to go with a very Brewers thing to do, which is where they don't get Kendall Graveman, but we have Kendall Graveman at home. And that's okay. Jose Cisnero.
Got it. Yes.
From the Tigers. He's had a good year. He's not going to be a ninth inning guy, but he's not going to be a ninth inning guy. I think he's having quite as good of a year as Kendall Graveman, but he's a rental. And Graveman figures to be one of the top relief pitchers on the market, not named Josh Hader. And Cisneros seems more like a Brewers signing, Brewers target than some of the other relievers I was thinking of.
I like it. I'm going to cheat and corner the market on Tigers pitchers. I'm going to give you three more names the Tigers are going to be selling. Michael Lorenzen is going to be the big one. He was an all-star this year. He is probably going to end the season in a different uniform. He's been a starting pitcher. You know him from seeing him with the Reds. He can do a lot of things.
You know him from past episodes with the Reds hitting home.
I mean, he can hit probably as well as anybody they have at the corner infield spots.
He can play the outfield.
Playing
the outfield.
Let's go. So for the bat alone, they should at least be interested. I'm going to throw out Matt Boyd, Jason Foley, a couple other guys. Foley's 27 years old, probably less likely to be on the move. Matt Boyd, 32, also a starting pitcher, left-handed, but could fit in a bullpen role if need be in a long-term, you know, a longer bullpen role. Those guys are all going to be available. The Tigers are still in their long, long rebuild. They are going to be moving some pieces. So all names to keep in mind.
The Brewers trading for a lefty who has been primarily a starter with the Tigers and is a free agent coming up has never backfired in the past.
Don't you talk about it. as Reese Olson makes starts for the Tigers.
I'm going to go with another bat here. So I'm going to wrap up some reliever talk and say this. The Brewers have flopped at the deadline with relievers the past 2 years. However, the arms that they've gotten since Matt Arnold took over as GM, it's been nails. I mean, they got Piamps as a you know, seemed like a throw in to a different trade. Peguero was, I don't really know who the headliner was in the Peguero trade. Maybe Jansen Junk, like the return. But I don't really think the Brewers got a headliner. But to my point, like Peguero was not a headline name in that deal. And some of the other guys, like just like buy low options they've gotten, have been super intriguing, I guess. Like McGill's intriguing. Bukauskas is kind of intriguing. So the track record so far is much better. And if they can continue that, then they will be in fantastic shape. Oh, Jackson Chourio just made a really nice play at the wall. All right. I will continue. This is my last one. The least likely player of the most likely players the Brewers are going to trade for. I'm going to go to first base, JR, and I'm going to go with Icy London, Icy Ty France from the Mariners. Oh, Ty France.
Hello. From the Mariners. That's a good one.
Yeah, Ty France is the Mariners should sell. I think they will, too. They're in kind of an interesting spot as well. I probably could have put them with the Angels, but I actually think they will sell. France is not exactly a rental. I think he's got maybe a year and a half, two and a half years left or something like that of team control. Not having a great year this year, but has been good in the past. Would certainly be an upgrade at first base, can DH, et cetera, et cetera. You know the story here.
I do. Yeah. So I'm gonna go ultra low sexy and also take a first baseman, CJ Cron from Colorado. Not having a great year. He's got an 88 OPS plus. That's way down from where he's been in past years. He wasn't all-star last year. Still, that wasn't his best offensive season. Really, you'd have to go back to 21. Even with the Tigers in 2020, he was better. I mean, that's a dumb season, but when he was with the Twins, he was better. But he does fit the mold of a guy that they could maybe reclaim a little bit. His OPS is down to 737 in total. He's only got, you know, 8 homers sitting in Colorado this year, but it feels like there might be something there. He is a free agent after the year. It wouldn't be a long-term risk. He's 33 years old. Even as I say it, I don't necessarily buy that it's a massive upgrade or anything. It would be more like trying something that they've done multiple times before and it hasn't necessarily worked out, trying to reclaim somebody who just hasn't had it. So I'm not sure if I buy it, but you know, if you believe that there's a fix in there, that could be somebody that you get in and you reclaim. All right, before I know there's other names. We want to talk about other names, but there's two names I really want to hit on.
Two names you really want credit for. All right.
But no, not credit for. I want to discuss them straight up.
Oh, okay.
Is Josh one of them? Yes. One of them is Josh Hader, who is the closer for the San Diego Padres. You may have heard of him. Padres are down bad. They're down bad. They need to trade Josh Hader. Like, they are not going anywhere this year, and they need to reclaim what they can. Josh Hader, of course, is a free agent after this year. He's available. I don't think there's any world where he could be a Milwaukee Brewer again, but possibly. We'll start there. Like, I'll bring up the other player in a minute. What are the odds that this happens? I mean, it totally could, but almost certainly won't, right?
Well, there's a couple. I mean, the big inhibitors here, like, are the Padres really going to do that? Which the answer they should. They should absolutely should. That they have no depth in their organization. None. They've lost it.
They're
all.
An old team now.
Yeah, they've traded it all away. They're old. They're very top. I think the roster's still all right, but like they just have no depth. So. They need to trade Josh Hader, get back what they can, and then try to put the pieces together again next year, have a good offseason. Like, actually, don't just win the offseason, but, like, do things like acquire UL Piams, like players like that, that are going to help you win. So now that my TED Talk on what the Padres should do is done, my TED Talk on the Brewers is that they should trade for him. Like, I understand the price tag is going to be, he's going to be the highest, he would be the top reliever on the market, fetch more than almost any other player on the market, even for a relief pitcher rental. But the return, I mean, like, we have the price tag in place for last year. Like, 1.5 years cost Robert Gasser and Esteri Ruiz. And I guess Taylor Rogers.
1.5 years.
1.5 years. Now this is a half. I don't think either of those players are like, and now this this comes down to Esteri Ruiz, how you view him, but I don't think he's like good. I did not think he was ever going to be an impact, like super impact player. And Robert Gasser is fine. He's a middle to the back of the rotation arm, but if it cost the Brewers Robert Gasser for Josh Hader right now, I would say do that trade.
I agree with that. What if it? Okay, so the Brewers' number three prospect is this catcher Jefferson Caro, who's been awesome.
I'm not doing that.
So I was going to ask about that because I feel like that's probably what the ask would be. Because hey, and the Brewers have William Contreras under control for a long time. It's not like Jefferson Caro has an obvious future with the Milwaukee Brewers. At some point, they probably trade him. At the current rate,
I would draw the line after the top five in the system, I think.
Interesting. Okay, because Robert Gasser does fall just below that.
Yeah, Black and Carroll right there at the back there. I would probably do Gasser. I would do Gasser, Carlos Rodriguez. Yeah, absolutely, if I'm the Brewers.
Okay, that's
your team would not give up any runs at the end of games.
Yeah, I mean, they will absolutely get a prospect better than one of the top five in the Brewers system to move him to someone else. I mean, there's just,
the thing is, I'm not sure. Now, part of the Brewers trade return was quote unquote diminished because they wanted to get win now reliever, and that was Rogers. But like, they did not get a top 100 prospect for him last year.
No, you're right. You're right. That's true. I feel like you get a big leaguer. I mean, like you said, a closer and a contender, like that's a big amount. That's a big get back in theory. Obviously it didn't work out, but in theory, that's a lot. So I don't know if a top 100 and a for a relief pitcher, if that was ever going to be in the cards, but I could be wrong. I don't know. I know we were kind of underwhelmed with the trade initially. So I don't know. Okay. The other name I want to bring up is a guy that you and I think both would have liked to have seen them trade for before the season, or not trade for, but sign as a free agent. And that's Justin Turner. Boston Red Sox. Again, corner infielder, third baseman. He's 38 years old. He's no spring chicken, and he's due $13.4 million next year. I think that's reasonable for the production that he's giving you, certainly with the Boston Red Sox this year. Now at 38 years old, how long do you think that production is going to happen? I have no idea. But if you want to fortify third base, you could do worse. And again, it comes down a little bit to what Boston's plans are. It's not a guarantee fire sale in Boston. So I don't know. I don't know if they want that second year. But do you think there's any chance Justin Turner actually does make his way to Milwaukee?
Just because the guy that the front office has interest in the past. I think I didn't name him with my other Red Sox players. I probably could have just looped him in there, but it's a similar thing of like, I think the market for him is going to be kind of hot. And he probably takes the buyout for the player option next year at $6.7 million. Because then he only has to, basically get a $7 million one-year deal, and he makes more than he would have made on the $13.4 mil player option. So it's not like it's going to cost the Brewers a ton in next year money, or you could probably also, find a way to make the Red Sox take some of that money. But then by that point, like, I don't know, but you get into weirdness with the prospect haul and whatnot. So I think in the end, it's just not going to happen, but he, as we have advocated for, would have been an excellent addition to the Brewers offense, would be a great addition to the Brewers offense, as would many other players. I was not sure with the price tag.
All right, here's one last question, then we'll get to three up, three down, and move on with this podcast. Is there a chance we're wrong about what we assume, how we assume the Milwaukee Brewers will operate? And here's what I mean by that.
Yes.
This is Matt Arnold's first trade deadline as the main guy. Obviously, he's been part of all these decisions, but this is his ship to steer now. They are dealing with still the year-long aftermath of trading Josh Hader and having that very unpopular move blow up in their faces in terms of the team falling out of first place, players being struggling with it, fans certainly struggling with it. Is it we assume conservatism because that is how the Milwaukee Brewers roll. And this team that we look at is not a team that looks like one that's going to compete for a World Series. I mean, they look like they're not in the league of an Atlanta or one of the powerful American League teams, or even the, I don't know, the Dodgers. Like, I guess they're a couple games behind the Dodgers at this point. But is it possible they really swing the other way and absolutely dive in, that they go get Blake Snell, or they're part of conversations to get, Paul Goldschmidt, Cody Bellinger, who's going to be a popular commodity, Max Scherzer, which I said jokingly earlier, right? Lucas Giolito. Like, is it possible they go in and say, we're going to do this on the trade deadline this year. We're going to go the opposite direction, and we are absolutely putting our chips in for this season, especially if they don't. I mean, I don't think they'll trade Jackson Chourio under any circumstances. I don't think they'll trade Jacob Mizorowski under any circumstances. But if they can make that work using everybody else, is it possible we see this team do that?
I think so. I think what we've seen under the Matt Arnold regime is that they're going to be very opportunistic. And I think there's just so many variable, like, variables and really good players that could be available that we're not really sure if they're available. But if they become available, and it's like the exact opposite of last year's trade market, which, if you remember, like, there were all these guys that should have been traded, and they were not moved. Teams just
You're right. Yep.
Like CJ Cron, your boy, Rockies, what are you doing? Trade him. Cubs, trade Wilson Contreras. Like, all these different players that teams were just like, no, we're good. We're not going to trade him. If it's sort of the opposite and teams are like, yeah, we're selling, there's going to be ample opportunities. And I think my read on it is kind of like what I mentioned with the hater price. I don't think it's going to be any of the top guys for sure for the Brewers, but that second level of the system is much better now. Like guys 6 through 15 in the system and the ranks, I could definitely see multiple of those guys going away for an impact rental.
We've heard a couple times now that they're not going to trade Corbin Burns. Both the player himself said that was the word he'd gotten from Matt Arnold. Matt Arnold has said this himself. He's not keeping it secret, or at least he doesn't. if he's being forthcoming, he's saying that they're not going to trade him. So knowing that, we assume they're not going to trade Brandon Woodruff. You know, we assume they're going to keep their pitchers and legitimately go for it, because Corbin Burns would be by far their best asset to trade if they wanted to go down that path. So that being said, I wonder if, you know, they're interested in doing that. And that could mean a lot of guys who might be considered distressed assets to a degree. You know, I'm talking about Aaron Ashby, Eric Lauer, Freddie Peralta, maybe. Like, is that possible? I mean, there's a lot of big league names. It doesn't have to just come from the farm system. Big league names who could contribute. Luis Arias, who has struggled this year, so he's not, you know, wouldn't fetch a huge return, but there's a guy with some control left that you might be considering. Garrett Mitchell. I mean, we've seen the center fielders. Like, he's injured now, so I don't know what you can get for him, but like there's possibilities here. So I think it will be an interesting deadline. I don't think they're going to go all in. I mean, I don't think really that's even realistic, but a lot of names. Should we throw out some more names before we get to 3-3 down?
A lot of names.
All right, fire.
Mike Ford.
Love it. Lane Thomas, right fielder for the Washington Nationals. Let's go.
Chris Stratton.
Ooh, Chris Stratton's a really good one. That might work out. I like that idea.
That was high on my list, actually.
Not sexy. 28-year-old starting pitcher Brad Keller for the Kansas City Royals. He's a free agent after this year.
Keenan Middleton, major key.
Interesting. Brett Suter, come on back. Hunter Renfro, okay, come on home. Come on home, former Milwaukee Brewers.
Andy Ibanez.
Who does he even play for?
Yep, that's a great question. Tigers.
Okay, all right. Sorry, Tigers. I'm not intimately familiar with this year's roster. Ooh, it's a tough hang. Chris Martin, who I feel like is a reliever that they've been connected to a couple times in the past. He's with the Red Sox. Only problem, he's going to be pricey. $7.5 million for next year, 37 years old. I don't know if I see that, but he's a name. He's doing really well.
Justin Lawrence.
Oh, Justin Lawrence is a really good one. I think that's a possibility. Kyle Finnegan in the same vein, relief pitchers. Young.
Last one for me. I'm gonna bang it out here. Teoscar Hernandez. Boom.
Oh, I like that one. Brent Rooker, who will be a pretty. He'll be a hotly. People are gonna want him. So
that'd
I'm not
be
sure
a bad thing for the A's to do, right? They should not trade him, which means they will. All right. We'll see. We'll see who gets more right. If anyone gets one right.
You know, we'll never get the Brewers will never be thought of as the primary players in that trade with Oakland, with because it's the Sean Murphy trade, starter for the All-Star game for the Atlanta Braves. But they got a guy in Yoel Piamp who probably could have been an All-Star, and William Contreras, who has been and easily could be an All-Star in the future, for Estuary Ruiz. I mean, no shade on Estuary Ruiz, but like he's not even that great a defender.
He can't hit.
Like, yeah, he might steal 90 bases.
The thing the Brewers really need, JR, is another guy who can play, who actually he can't even play defense, who can't hit and is fast.
Yes, that's they got those at home, to use your expression there. They definitely came out.
So here's a little fun nugget for you. Sean Murphy has 3.8 F4, which is where I like to use F4 for catchers. I like to use different WAR for different positions if I'm using WAR. Which William Contreras is 2.8 WAR. I like Fangraphs there because you use framing for catchers, as mentioned. But then I like using baseball reference for relievers, because it takes leverage into account more instead of just like looking at their FIP, which like Piamps and Peguero's WAR on Fangraphs way too low for the value they've actually provided. So I like looking at reference. Piamps 1.5 WAR. So if you combine those two, the Brewers have made out better than the Braves in their return. Pretty crazy.
I love this.
That's pretty crazy to think about.
Thank you.
Can that be my first three up, three down? I'm gonna open up three up, three down.
Let's do it. Let's go right now. We are an hour into this, and it is only gonna get longer. Let's go. Three up, three down.
Yes, the Brewers won the trade.
Is that your first one? Brewers won the trade.
That was my first one. Yes, the Braves also won it, but the Brewers won it more, at least for this year.
All right, so we've already we're backfilling the three up, three down. There were a fair amount of things that happened this week. I guess we could just go to the All-Star game. The fact that the Brewers did not play in the All-Star game again, Devin Williams went, but we knew he wasn't going to pitch. Corbin Burns was not used. The National League snapped a long losing streak for the first time since 2012. They won an All-Star game. There were no Brewers in it. Only one other team was not represented. That was the Chicago White Sox. That's because Luis Robert got hurt in the All-Star Home Run Derby, so he wasn't able to play. He was their only representative. Burns kind of said that, you know, a lot of the guys here are first timers. Burns is not a first timer. Figured he wouldn't pitch. That is what happened. So he was able to start on Friday to kick off the second half. That worked out for the Brewers, I would say. First time since 2017. It wasn't that long ago that the Brewers did not appear in the All-Star game. Corey Knebel was the only representative, did not pitch. But before that, you got to go back to 96 when Greg Vaughn got sick during All-Star weekend and was unable to appear. So no Brewers in the All-Star game. Still, it was kind of an exciting game. You know, late homer for Elias Diaz of the Colorado Rockies. Great moment for him on a last place team. That's a nice moment for him. So no Brewers this year. It's not that uncommon. It's going to happen again. That's all.
Freddie Peralta getting burned. The Brewers getting burned. They could have had a no-hitter.
We talked
about Freddie, but we didn't talk about that part of it. You have a story up, the 21st, 22nd one-hitter in franchise history, which we've talked about this. It's insane that they have that many one-hitters and two no-hitters.
Yeah, 5 years in a row now with a one-hitter, by the way.
Yeah, and he should have had a no-hitter. I mean, it's easy to say woulda, shoulda, coulda. But he had Jake Fraley struck out in the fourth inning, and it was called a ball. And then a pitch or two later, Fraley dumped a single into the outfield for the only hit of the game for the Reds.
Next pitch, I believe. And it was not a borderline. It was a clear in-zone strike.
It was a strike. It was a bad call. Home plate umpires. It's the last two series against the Reds. Actually, the Cubs series is bad umpiring too. This is a really bad stretch the Brewers are in of just poor umpires.
A couple nights ago, I want to say Friday night, the ump was really good. I don't remember for sure. Maybe that's even before
I was on a plane. I don't know if you remember this. I was flying.
You were on a plane in a plane. So absolutely. They easily could have had a no hitter. Now it would have been one of the combined ones because Freddie Peralta ain't throwing nine innings in any scenario at this point, but, he absolutely was strike three and it was called a ball. And then you get the broken bat, like legit shredded bat. Dumper toward the left side. I mean, there's nothing anybody could have done, but it was the weakest hit. Probably if you looked at all those 22 100s, that's probably, with maybe the exception of the Sabathia play back in 2008, that's probably the weakest hit you'll see that kept them from getting a no-hitter. Very sad. The draft was interesting. That's my next three up, three down
this
item.
It was.
The Brewers drafted a couple guys that I think most people thought were just going to go honor their commitments to college, and now it's... It looks like they're going to try for some of this really high level high school talent that they were able to draft in kind of the fifth, sixth, seventh round, that territory. I don't know if they're going to pull it off, but there's no reason to think that they wouldn't. I believe Cooper Pratt is the shortstop who is kind of the name that everybody was really focused on. A lot of sort of national scouts were saying this is a really interesting get for the Brewers. They did also draft a high school shortstop named Eric Bitonti in the third round. So that was already going to be somebody that have to commit resources to. And then Pratt in the sixth round could be somebody. He's out of where is he? Is he Floridian? I've already forgotten where he's from. But interesting draft from the Brewers. And I think if they are able to sign some of these guys that they kind of took what seems like middle round flyers on, this could end up being a really productive group of guys. So an interesting draft for the Brewers this year.
It was I think it was a very good draft. I thought the Brewers hit it out of the park. And that was, I thought they had a good draft before they took Cooper Pratt in the sixth round, which might turn out to be an incredible steal. So yeah, solid job done all around there by the Brewers. To wrap things up, JR, Andrew Monasterio, I'm going to go with, he has a WRC plus over 100.
Really? I would not have guessed that in a million years.
He's kind of hung around and just played solid. And now he's, you know, helped them in a big, big way win the game on Sunday. And he's playing a lot now that Brian Anderson is hurt. The Brewers optioned Luis Urias and kept Monasterio up. That was a big telltale sign there. And they just keep playing him. And he hasn't been great, but he has produced. He had a good game as a leadoff hitter a while ago, a couple weeks ago in Pittsburgh. So kind of just an interesting story there that he's still kicking.
Yeah, I don't think he's a guy you want in your starting lineup, ideally, if you're clicking on all cylinders. But, you know, if you're above average, you're above average. And he, like you said, he has stayed here a lot longer than I think anybody thought he would be here. He made a great play to end the game on Saturday off the bat of Ellie De La Cruz. You know, really slick fielding play. Had a miscue in the field that probably cost Adrian Hauser a quality start. It was in the sixth inning, so 5 2/3 is what Hauser went. We didn't even mention him. He had a solid start on Sunday. But then, like you said, the single against Alexis Diaz, one of the best relief pitchers in baseball, and he gets the clutch two-out single to score the go-ahead run in the eighth inning. 4-3, the Brewers win when Hobie Milner and Devin shut it down from there. So wild stuff. Great week for him. I mean, great weekend only, but still, like, he's you got to hand it to him. He has absolutely just kept his spot by merit. You know, it's not out of desperation. So Andrew Monasterio, interesting run for him. I'll close with the schedule release. We know where the Brewers are going to next year. Similar situation to this year with the Cincinnati Reds. They're done with the Reds before the start of August. That's going to be the case with the Cubs next year. They will not play the Cubs in August or September of next year, which feels kind of significant. I feel like if the Brewers are indeed contenders next year, the Cubs will probably be contenders too. So that's certainly something that's going to come up next year. They open in New York at Citi Field against the Mets. I think it's the third year in a row they haven't opened the season, which I think it probably makes, it's fine, you know, whatever, like it's going to come around again. But I've already forgotten who they're, I think it's the Twins that they open with their home. Yep. Yeah. The home opener. They did that a couple years ago, had a, I think that was 2021, big walk-off winner in extras. Travis Shaw had a huge hit in that game. That was to tie it. That was that weird 2021 season where stadiums were half full to start the year. So that, you know, that's always a decent little rivalry, but that is out. So, I mean, you know, interesting stuff again, like a balanced schedule. You get to see all the American League teams that they went to are going to be coming here this year, including Seattle with Jared Kelenic. So that'll be kind of fun. And yeah, Toronto as well. Danny Jansen, a couple other Wisconsin, Dalton Varsho, a couple Wisconsin connections there. So that should be fun. Okay, enough of that. Other things we could have talked about, three up, three down. Sheets, Ben Sheets' Walk of Fame induction is coming August 26th. I hope to get him on the pod soon. That could be super, super fun if I get that. Jason Lane sent another runner to his doom, although it sounds like it was if you watch it, it was a sensible send of Joey Weimer. He did get thrown out the plate. Jason Lane's been under a little bit of fire, but I would say that his sends on Sunday were pretty smart. You know, one that I thought was maybe going to turn into a pretty close play and ended up being a wild throw. So looked good on Sunday. Third base coach who does way more than just third base coaching. So he kind of you only really see the tip of the iceberg with him. But we could talk about that maybe at some other time if that continues to become a story. But those are the other things for three up, three down. Okay, let's go back in time real quick. Remember when. Kurt, I want to make this as quick as possible. We've had so much time on this podcast, but wanted to comment on the Brewers' back-to-back 1-0 wins, the last game before the All-Star break, the first game after the All-Star break. That has only happened, well, never. It's the first time in franchise history it's ever happened. It's only happened that two consecutive wins by 1-0 scores were, that's only happened twice before in Brewers history, and not since, I want to say 1992 is one of them, but back-to-back games, 1-0 wins, that had never happened before, so that's a weird quirk that the Brewers get to put a feather in their cap. Back in 1971, though, they had a really interesting run. They did have consecutive wins by 1-0 counts, but here's how it went. They beat the White Sox on July 11th, 1-0, in the first game of a doubleheader. These are the last games before the All-Star break, and then they lost the nightcap to the White Sox, 1-0. Then they came back against the Yankees to start the second half, and then they won that game 1-0. Three consecutive 1-0 games, win-loss win, and technically back-to-back days playing with 1-0 wins since this was a doubleheader. Ted Kubiak, some names in here. He had the sacrifice fly versus Tommy John in the ninth against the White Sox there for that 1-0 win, so it was a really close game. Marty Patton, who had been selected to the All-Star game that year. So again, this is the last day before the All-Star break. He works into the ninth and gets two outs, allows back-to-back singles, and then they had to bring a guy named John Morris in to get the last out. That was a 2-hour, 15-minute game. The nightcap, 1 hour and 49 minutes. This is a Todd Rosiak dream here, getting consecutive games at 2:15 or less. That was a complete game shutout by Wilbur Wood for the White Sox. Brewers were in last place at the All-Star break. They weren't a very good team. This is only their second year of existence. They were 37-48. Patton, by the way, did not pitch in the All-Star game, if you're interested in that. And then against the Yankees, it was an Ed Herman home run in the fifth inning that turned the tide there. Or actually, I think that was the White Sox Ed Herman hitting it off Bill Parsons. That was their 1-0 win. It was Dave May who had the big hit against Mel Stottlemyre of the Yankees in the 9th inning, and then Ken Sanders working a multi-inning relief appearance to get the win. But that was the third time that season that David May had homered in the 9th inning against the Yankees to spoil shutouts, which feels like a weird statistical quirk. Brewers lost the first two, but they end up winning this one, 1-0. I think Tommy Harper robbed a home run in that game, too. So that was probably pretty fun for a last-place team. The Brewers lost the next game 7-4 and then 13-11 to Boston. So, of course, they did after three straight 1-0 games. Okay, that's it. Remember when we're done being in the past. Let's do the moment we've all been waiting for, at least I've been waiting for. It's Kurt's Take of the Week. It is Kurt Blanche.
Ryan Braun sends it to left center and deep. Get up! Get out of here! Gone for Ryan Braun. He just hit a walk-off homer.
All right. We look from the past and remember when. To a bit of the future.
The future.
Keston here needs to be here, JR.
Oh, Keston, my heart.
I've seen enough bad offense. Particularly from a couple of positions where you need good offense to sit quietly any longer. Keston Hira might not be the answer. We've seen him be hot and cold enough, you know, in the majors after dominating in the minors. Like that is the thing that has happened with him before multiple times. So like it might not be the answer, but it might be one of the answers. This is a guy, JR, who last year, despite striking out over 40% of the time, entirely too much, I think anyone and everyone will admit that, still had a 115 WRC plus. He would be the second best hitter on this year's team behind Christian Yelich if he posted those exact same numbers again this year. Now there's reason to believe that could be better. There's reason to believe it could be worse as well, which is what I just mentioned. Like he has not always panned out in the major leagues after hitting a AAA. But the strikeout rate is down in the minor leagues this year. He's made some different swing changes. He's striking out less than a quarter of the time, JR, 23.8%. Like this is, at the end of the day, this is the guy who is still the best hitting prospect that you've produced since Ryan Braun. He's not, you know, the 2019 thing might have been a flash in the pan. But also, again, he had a 115 WRC plus last year. You are getting absolutely nothing from your DH spot. You're getting very little from first base. Like you can move Owen Miller around that way. It's just time. It is just time to give a guy with a 1,000 OPS at AAA a chance when he has demolished big league pitching in the recent past.
When a team has an obvious hole and a playoff future, as I think the Brewers think they do, and I think fairly think they do, you'd like to think that they're doing everything they can, even if it's creative or even if it's unusual or even if it hasn't worked in the past, to try to address that obvious hole. I don't understand why Keston Hira isn't here yet. And, you know, I'm he's flawed. Like, no one's going to deny it, like you said, but you still get something out of that. And he would fill the void that is specifically missing with DH and first base. I mean, no one's going to say he's a great defensive first baseman, but like there are holes in Rowdy Tellez's defense at first base. You know, Owen Miller is still learning on the fly. He's actually, I think he's been really good lately as a defensive first baseman, but you're not sacrificing great defense at first base at any point. And you're certainly getting a guy who can mash even if he strikes out a ton. So why hasn't this happened yet? What is the stumbling block? Yes, he strikes out a lot. Okay, so does Jesse Winker. I mean, Winker gets on base a great deal, but like, what is this, Kurt? What's taking so long?
The relationship was supposed to have ended, in spring training
when he was released, right?
Yep.
Designated for signing.
But just because the relationship was supposed to end, doesn't mean that 6 months later you can't have a little fling.
That's very deep and weird. Yeah, I think I'm uncomfortable with that, but. I still think it's going to happen. I feel like we're well past the point where it could have. I mean, there are a lot of different ways creatively.
There were multiple times where if it was going to happen, it would have happened.
Right.
But there's still some left.
I mean, there's no shade to Jamai Jones, who got sent down and brought back up when the Rowdy Tellez injury.
Yeah. I mean, part
worsened.
Of it is like, it feels like it would almost have to be a straight up swap for Jesse Winker at this point, which
it would. It does. Yes.
There is an argument to be made there as well, though.
I would do that. But also you know, you've got to be past their threshold to say, okay, we are punting on this exercise. It's not as simple as bring Keston Hira up for a little bit and see what happens. And then maybe, you know, change your mind. Like that would be a big move. I understand that. So, man, you just got to get that bat. You got to get any bat you have, because this offense has just not produced. Get any bat you have in there to try and make it not just Christian Yelich, William Contreras, and seven guys. You know, Willie Adames has been better lately. So, and I don't want to completely discredit Owen Miller. He's had great stretches this season, but like, they need bats. Get a bat. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. Kurt, that's going to do it. I've got this interview with Eric Kratz coming up. It's not a short one, so again, this podcast is going to continue talking about the book that he's in, The Tao of the Backup Catcher, written by Tim Brown, formerly of Yahoo, or I think currently with Yahoo Sports. Many other places you've seen him. Eric Kratz was very gracious to spend some time with me. But Kurt, any last thoughts before I let you go?
Jackson Chirio is 3-for-3 in the game I'm watching right now.
Oh, Jackson Chirio is very good. Very fun to watch. The minors in general, pretty fun to watch. Pretty fun to watch right now for the Milwaukee Brewers. We will chat with you again next week on Microbrew. Thank you for tuning in, everybody. We will see you very soon. Bye-bye.
I am joined by Eric Kratz, former backup catcher for the Milwaukee Brewers. He was a fan favorite here in 2018 when the Brewers went to the NLCS. I know a lot of people remember that. He's now, I mean, I find you in my social feeds all the time. So I'll talk about, primarily I want to talk to you about this book that features you prominently, The Tao of the Backup Catcher. I'm going to talk about that a little bit as well. But what are you doing right now? Because you've got all this Foul Territory swag, the Foul Territory podcast or presence. I mean, give me the full rundown. You're definitely still doing a lot of baseball stuff.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate. I got approached to do the whole podcast show. Like, I feel like sometimes podcast isn't quite like, it's, you know, weird. Really describe what it is, you know, because it's a show that we did, and we actually, you know, we're on Monday to Friday live, mm-hmm. 1 to 3, and so we're doing it every day. We went to the All-Star game, we did the All-Star game breakdown, I mean the draft takeover, All-Star game takeover. It was a lot of stuff, and we're very extremely fortunate to get to do it with AJ Pierzynski and Todd Frazier and Adam Jones and Lorenzo Cain. Brock Holt was just on today. And then we get guests. Those are the hosts. And then we get guests on to just talk about baseball. Kind of like you and I are talking. Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be this like, oh, well, how was your game? What did you feel? You know, what is, you know, just like we had Mike Trout on the other day. And what are the two things you know about Mike Trout outside of baseball? Like
Philadelphia, and that's it. Actually, awesome at baseball, I was going to say.
Right, right. Like, you know he's awesome at baseball. He's an Eagles fan, and he likes weather. And everybody always he gives the same answers. He was on because Todd and I are good friends. Todd's a good friend with him. I played with him back when he was 19. So we have that connection, and we just talked. He was like, he leans in, he goes, I mean, you guys need to tell me. Like, he was like telling us, like whispering to us or something. He's like, you guys got to tell me, like, how fast were the fastballs when you guys first came to the big leagues? You know, it's just a candid moment, which I don't think baseball allows. I think other sports allow it. I think other sports, for whatever reason, allow. And I think some of it has to do with the whole, you know, MLB Network kind of thing, where it's like the owners own it. So they're just like, hey, we're good with status quo. Like, we want to, you know, we want to just worry about making our money, and we'll just stick to it. And this show really gives us and the players a voice, which is really a lot of fun for me.
Yeah, I had to laugh because I haven't, in full disclosure, I haven't gotten all the way through The Tao of the Backup Catcher, but I've gotten a lot of the way through it. And there's a really touching vignette about the end of your career and kind of knowing that it was over in 2020 and, you know, walking away from baseball. And I'm just like, Eric Kratz hasn't walked away from baseball. He's everywhere. He's like the future Pat McAfee for baseball. So I don't know if you thought that you were going to stick around the game, but here you are. I want to know all about this book, the book written by Tim Brown. A lot of people might know him from Yahoo Sports and a few other areas, but you kind of alongside him, and you are the sort of backbone of this story. There's a lot of vignettes about various other backup catchers, but primarily it comes back to you and your story. So I'm curious, exactly when you were approached or if you did the approaching and when this idea came about and just how heavily involved you were with it.
I was very heavily involved. Well, I did none of the writing because I cannot write. I misspell things in text messages with the word, with the spell check correction, you know. So the writing, not me. The storytelling, yes, we worked. Well, Tim worked a ton on it. I worked quite a bit on it also. And it was something that I would go throughout my career. It didn't matter if it was when I was in the minor leagues, when I just made the big leagues, when I was in the big leagues for 3 years or at the end of my career. People were like, you got to write a book. And I would explain to them, I just explained to you, well, I can't spell. And it would be one long run-on sentence and there'd be no paragraphs and then the book would just end. And so it was like, it was never something where, oh, I have to write it, you know, or you got to get a scribe. No, like I need someone else's like thought process. In 2018, right at the trade deadline, when I was worried I was going to, the Brewers were going to trade for JT Realmuto. And most Brewers fans were like, yeah, let's trade for JT Realmuto. Like, we'll definitely get rid of Kratz for that. He interviewed me for his podcast and he was so well prepared. He knew so much about me, but not just like about me. He just got it right. He got every little thing right. And sometimes reporters get some things right. Like I played 19 seasons in the big leagues and they'll be like, you know, I played 18 seasons in the big league. You know, they don't really, sure. They don't really do the, just the, it doesn't really matter if you say it's 18 or 19. It's just that little bit. And you could tell he was really, really aware. So then when we made the postseason run, he was kind of like, he approached me and was like, did you ever think about writing a book? And I'm like, actually, yeah. He's like, well, I had an idea from my days being a beat writer of writing a book about backup catchers. And he goes into it in the book about how it's really something that it's really a position that is kind of void of analytics. It's kind of been the person in the locker room that you don't interview right away because the superstars played. And if they do something, it's like, well, you know, he probably won't do it again tomorrow. But he always loved talking to the backup catchers because he felt like, you know, certain ones in his career, the ones that he interviews here were honest. They were, you know, they've seen so many things. They were in the middle of things or kind of the glue in the clubhouse. So it's stuff that he'd always wanted to write about. And we got together and this, cause we actually started in spring of 2019 when the Brewers essentially fired me by signing Yasmani Grandal and they made their bed and got ousted in the first round of the playoffs instead of game seven of the NLCS, like when I was on the team.
Now, in fairness, Grandal did homer in that wild card game. So
he did, which I definitely wouldn't have done. So that's fair. It was against Scherzer. I wouldn't have hit a home run against Scherzer, but he did call a fastball to the greatest fastball hitter of the current league's generation. Not my opinion, just stats. Why would you call a fastball to Juan Soto?
It's fair. You're right. They made their bed. What can I say?
They did make their bed, and they saved. They paid him like $17.9 million, I think. Mm-hmm. They could have paid me like $6 million, and I would have. That would have been such a huge discount for him.
And Josh Hader's throwing a slider to Juan Soto, and history is just a little bit different. What? Yep. So I'm guessing there were a lot of interviews and a lot of just looking back. I think it's mind-boggling. 120, more than 120 transactions that you have been a part of. That number definitely jumped out at me and slapped me in the face. What did you learn about your career? Because I mean, you've been documenting it in your head the whole way. But were there lessons, things that you didn't realize, big themes you didn't realize as you were sort of going through this process?
Hopefully, and honestly, not just through the process of the book, but starting this show. The two people that are normally on the show the most are me and AJ Przinsky and Scott Braun. Mm-hmm. Scott Braun's, you know, he's incredible host skills. Like he facilitates everything, but guys come on and they talk about their kind of interactions with AJ or their interactions with me. And the thing I didn't realize was right out of the gate was the interactions that people, the positive interactions that people have had with me. And it's kind of embarrassing. Like, it's been kind of like, they're like, oh my gosh, like this and that about Eric. And it's so like, I'm like, all right, well, let's just get on to like what we're talking about. Because, but ultimately that's what I felt like my role was. Did I want to be a 20 home run guy making $17.9 million in a qualifying offer? Absolutely. Did I want to be good enough to stay around to complete what we didn't complete in 18 with the Brewers, then in 19? Absolutely. But I also knew that, and this was something that my wife and I, we prayed before the season that like we would be in positions to make impacts with people. Yeah. And would, if the ball I just missed and hit a fly ball to the wall against Walker Buehler in game 7 goes over the fence, if I had squared it up, it would have gone over Bernie's slide. Mm-hmm. Like, if that goes over and we go to the World Series, we had 100% confidence we were going to win the World Series. Like, we felt like we had that team. Does that impact more people? Because in Milwaukee now, they have a World Series banner. Then they have, like, every 5 years, they bring the team back and we celebrate the team. Or is that, like, a selfish thing for me? I don't know. And I don't know. And I won't know that until my time here on earth is done. But it's something that I am – I know I was in the situations that I was in. And so looking back on it, like thinking about all the different transactions, thinking about the fact that my wife and I moved 94 times for a month or more in our 20 years of marriage is all really cool stuff. But it's also – It made me realize that 2020 vision, hindsight is 2020 vision. Like, I can always look back, but it also encourages me. And I hope that's what people get out of the book, is it should encourage them that while things may not be going the way that you planned them to go or you have worked for them to go, if you continue to work and you continue to make investments in the people around you, it's going to be freaking awesome in the end.
Yeah, I've been trying as I've been going through the book, kind of because even if you're a backup catcher and you know don't have that sort of all-star skill set or whatever it is, being around the game for 20 years requires something. You know, 19 years, I think it's 13 big league teams. I don't even know. I should know. I'm not as good as Tim Brown. I don't know if it's 13 or it's somewhere in that neighborhood. I mean, you still there has to be something, a value that keeps you in this game. And I figured, oh, it's just persistence and, you know, waiting for the next opportunity and believing it's going to be there. Maybe it's self-awareness, knowing that you are a backup catcher. That is who you are. I don't think there is one thing. Like, I couldn't come up with it. A lot of the guys you mentioned, backup catchers, are managers now. Maybe it's just smarts, you know, like maybe it's just being empathetic and being able to talk to pitchers and when they're going right, when they're going poorly. What would you say? Is there a thing that made you, I mean, you know, a 19-year professional baseball player is not something to sneeze at no matter your skill set.
No doubt. And I do the old Bob Uecker self-deprecation, I guess. I guess it's the position, you know, I don't have a problem saying those kinds of things about my career that are kind of like degrading certain things. And my wife always tries to encourage me. Oh, you know, you were really good. You know, different people in my life encourage me, but I'm confident enough in what I did in my career. And you are correct. It is a crazy accomplishment to have spent 19 seasons, to play for 14 different organizations, to play in a game for 9 big league teams and 2 other teams. I was on the big league team, but never played in a game. Like, yes, all incredible, incredible accomplishments. And I do have a skill set. I could hit the ball out of the ballpark sometimes, and I could receive the ball well, and I called a pretty decent game. I never caught a no-hitter. I never had a 30 home run season. You know, I had a really good arm. I didn't throw the ball as fast as Manny Pena did down to second base, you know. But I feel like if there was a sixth tool, just that relationship aspect. Mm-hmm. All those things you said, you picked out every single thing that goes into being a big leaguer. I think, not just a backup catcher, but a big leaguer. And I think it's something that is super, super important in any role. I don't think it's just, well, I'm a backup catcher, I guess I got to be a good guy, you know, or I went for the manager position at the local grocery store that I work at, and I'm just the assistant manager. Well, I read Eric Kratz's book, I guess I got to be a good guy. Like this. No, like that's how you should start your day. Like nobody sits there and says, wow, like that superstar was really one of the best teammates that I ever played with. Unless it's true. They'll say, dang, that guy could absolutely rake. That guy was the best outfielder I've ever seen. And normally when people, the first thing they say about you, unless it's a joke or something, like if they say, wow, you are really bald, you know, that's kind
people
of
say that about you too, I suppose, but definitely me.
They, yes, we're twins. We're twins in that sense. But, you know, usually they'll say your greatest trait. And I hope my greatest trait is that relationship aspect. I think the one part in the book, it talks about, you know, a backup catcher is a priest, is a drinking buddy, is a, you know, is a psychologist, is whatever the person needs in the moment. And hopefully I was that. Just like giving autographs to fans. I know I've screwed up and missed a fan that I didn't give an autograph to. I know there's players that I wasn't as engaged as I should have been. I wasn't as aware of what was going on. And that hurts me to hear that, like, you know, oh man, like, yeah, I was going through this when we played. And I was like, dang, like, that sucks. I had no idea. I wish I was a better teammate and actually knew that.
Yeah. Do you remember enough about Milwaukee to know that if you had hit that home run and the Brewers had gone to the World Series, where the Eric Kratz statue, where you'd like it to be built? Like, are you thinking lakefront? Where exactly?
No, the statue would have been, see, they had some public porta potties that were always permanent. I would have loved for my statue to have been in a Milwaukee Brewers jersey that, you know, everybody can see. None of the, like, you know, Cerveceros jerseys or anything, players weekend. Nope, just a regular classic jersey, hat on, and you open up the porta potty. Oh, that one's, wait a minute, that's the Eric Kratz porta potty jersey. Like, I'd be sitting there and I'd just be like this.
smiling with your thumbs up. I love it. I haven't read far enough to know if there are many Brewers things. It's not a linear story necessarily, but are there Brewers parts of the book? Because famously that was your first time to play in the postseason. You did very well, particularly in that Rocky series, as many people remember. So what if a Brewers fan picks up this book, what might they be finding?
They're going to find how much of an integral part of my Brewers career was really in my journey. And honestly, I'll have to, this is for Brewers fans who are listening to this. I don't want you to be deterred from reading the book, but we originally had the apex of the book, as Tim explained it, as me walking off the field after game 7, being left on deck for Mike Moustakas' strikeout. And I was on deck getting an opportunity possibly to come out there and continue the rally to beat the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. And that was where – because every year in my career, we talk about it in the book, every year in my career, I don't know if I'm going to have another season.
Right.
I don't know. And at that point in my career, I knew I had done well, and I still didn't know if I was going to have another season. Ironically, I got a pseudo contract, not really a contract, like a pseudo contract from the Brewers that signified, I am going to have another season. And then that got pulled out from underneath me. So there's a lot of Brewers stuff. And so originally the book, when he had first put it together, that's where he had like the apex kind of, and we're still going to talk about 19 and 20, but it was going to kind of be in that Brewers conversation. But we changed it then to walking off the field as a Yankee after we lost game five to the Rays during the COVID season. And it, in the book, Tim really, he paints it really well to the point where, you know, I remember the one of the first times I read it, like in print, and I was like, geez, I'm tearing up. Like, I remember that really well. Cause it was tearing up because it's emotional, not because I'm like, I have to be back. No, it was something that I, and maybe this has helped me transition from not playing.
Yeah.
I am so glad to be done. Not because I didn't like playing, but just because I found so many other things that I can put my time into and spend my time with my family. And I have a lot of satisfaction in the show that I'm doing. And we were writing the book. So there was a lot going on, but the Brewers part of the book, I don't think Brewers fans are going to be disappointed. Let's put it that way. Okay.
There's some language early on that really struck me that, you know, starting catchers get to retire. They get to have the retirement. Yadier Molina is a good example. He had like a 2-year retirement ceremony, it feels like. Backup catchers don't get that luxury. They just, and you're a great example, very popular. Everybody loved you. But then, you know, a couple years later, it's like, oh yeah, Eric Kratz, I forgot about him. And the language is, it's like a new stadium. They get, you know, people like that and they're nostalgic, but then they trample over it on their way to the new thing. So unfortunately, Yasmani Grandal in 2019 was the new thing for Brewers fans. One of the best memories I have was all your buddies who came to that 2018 NLCS, and they had jerseys from all the other teams with whom you'd played. You had a closet of legitimate jerseys that you had worn in your big league career. I think I know the answer to this question because I know there's a lot of memorabilia behind you now. I'm assuming you still have all these jerseys from every team you've played. Is that correct?
I do still have them all. And it's actually one of the, when people ask me to speak, I'm not on like a speaking tour, but when people ask me to speak, and I've actually been, it's pretty cool, people pay me to speak sometimes. I don't understand why they pay me to do something that I do often. But,
I have an idea, but anyway.
I put all my jerseys from my career on, and I take the people that I'm talking to basically through a journey. Mm-hmm. Like I take a jersey off and it helps me remember, like, oh my gosh, like I don't write anything out. Mm-hmm. I just, sometimes I'm like, wait a minute, like what jersey is underneath here? And I have all those jerseys. I do. And they're game used. Oh, they're game used jerseys. Nobody's cut like pieces off of them and put them in a baseball card yet. So it's something that's really cool. I have them all hanging up in my closet in my bedroom, and I don't have a lot of other clothes, so it takes up most of my closet. But thinking, you know, all this memorabilia behind me is, it's ex teammates stuff. This was my USA jersey from 2019.
Yeah.
Which brings me to like another story. Like if I hadn't gotten fired by the Brewers, and I wouldn't have gotten the opportunity that I had to play on Team USA to qualify for the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2020, I was going to go play in the Olympics and then be done. Well, the old one-niner came, the COVID one-niner came, and they canceled the Olympics. And by that time, I had already told my wife and my kids, I'm not playing anymore, so I couldn't go back on it. So mm-hmm. 2020 became my last season without playing in the Olympics.
All right, a couple rapid fire, just a couple before we wrap this up. Ned Yost, former Brewers manager, himself a backup catcher, once told a story about how he just had really good success against the pitcher, Tommy John, who was very good. Of course, he's famous for the surgery, but was a very good pitcher. And I remember him saying, yeah, I don't know what it was. I just whooped him. Did you have a pitcher in your career that you just, for whatever reason, had great success against or saw the ball really well against? He fooled everybody else, but for some reason you had his number.
He fooled everybody else?
A pretty good pitcher. We gotta get a pretty good pitcher.
Okay, pretty good pitcher. Brewers fans would like the fact that I absolutely waffled Mike Fiers.
Okay, all right.
I saw the ball really well off him. Another central guy, Mike Leake.
Uh-huh.
I smashed him.
Nice.
But the ones that I always tell people, the guys that I hit really well, Aroldis Chapman. Mm. I was 2-for-5 against with a double and a homer. And I attribute it to this and only this. They had no idea who I was. And so once I hit a homer off them, then they knew. Because David Price, I hit a homer off of David Price.
Mm-hmm.
And in the post-game interview, he goes, I actually really wasn't – he had a shutout going in the eighth inning, and I pinch hit. And they go, he goes, yeah, I wasn't really sure who it was. His exact quote. Well, now good. You better ask somebody.
That's fantastic. You know, we mentioned 120 transactions. Who's the best player you've been traded for? It's probably, I think, a guy on the minor league level. It's those are a little harder to dig up.
The best player I got traded for, Danny Valencia, was a really good player.
Mm-hmm.
There was a pitcher that I got traded, and they released him. I got traded from the Padres to the Astros, and they released him. Oh my gosh, how am I forgetting his name? But they released him, and like 2 days after, he threw a bullpen for the Padres, and they released him. The Marlins, I think, picked him up, and he ended up making an all-star team. He was the opening day starter. Oh, I forget his name.
I'll look him up. We'll find him. I'll find that.
Okay.
Paper trail. And then, there are going to be a lot of – I don't know if you have any other memories from that Brewers season. Maybe not even necessarily the postseason. Like, there's a couple things that jumped to mind to me. There was a 15-inning game against Pittsburgh that Milwaukee had no business winning, but Jordan Lyles walks. You have a big single. Orlando Arcia, game-winning, one of the most memorable games for me for 2018. I mean, there's a game against the Rockies. I think that Brewers lost where you score. You were the last out, but got to first on a drop third strike, and that game ended up extending. I don't know if there's anything in particular. Every time I ask this question of somebody, it's always like it's more the relationships and the guys, and so I understand if that's the answer. But I didn't know if there was one more thing that you wanted to that you recall.
I mean, I recall Christian Yelich. Just absolutely going ham on the National League. I remember, and what's crazy was, so he was on a show about a month and a half ago, and we were talking about it. He was like, Kratzy, I feel like I've kind of like unlocked some things. And he's very cerebral. Like, he's a thinker. He thinks about balance and all this stuff. And I started watching him. And I started putting out there, like, to people, I'm like, hey, like, Yelly's starting to turn a corner. He's really starting to push it. And then about 2.5 weeks ago, I was like, if Yelly does a few things, he might actually have a better first half than the year in 2018 that I played with him. And Scott Braun on the show, he's like, 2018? He goes, wait a minute, 2018 was the year he won the MVP. I said, yes. I said, everybody thinks he was legit from the whole season. I said, no, he wasn't. We were in Pittsburgh. Brandon Woodruff hit a home run, and we were both in that. He was kind of struggling. Yelly was. And we were both in the video room. And he goes, hey, check out what Woody does with his swing. I'm like looking at it. I'm like, yeah, he hit a dinger. That's all I see.
That was a bomb, too.
It was a bomb.
Yeah.
And he goes, no, check out. He's like, look at his balance. Like, that's really good. Like, I might try that. And I'm like, I don't see what you're looking at. And from that day on, he went off. And that was right before the All-Star break. Not the abysmal trip to Pittsburgh that we had right before the All-Star break. That I remember some just awful memories.
Yeah.
Oh, that was
tough.
That was tough. That was tough.
Rainy last day. Oh man. Anyway.
It was raining and the ball went through my legs as it was skipping through the rain on, you know, a triple off the wall. Like, yeah, bad news bears. Anyway. But that I remember that so vividly, how good he was and how he was getting better. But everybody remembers 19, how he started the year off, and it was like he's gonna win another MVP. And he was the MVP the whole year until they gave it to Bellinger because he broke his kneecap. Mm-hmm. And I really think Yelly has that in him this year. And what a sight that would be. Also, the fact he's stolen twice as many bases. His on-base percentage is like, it's – I know you see it because you're a Brewers fan and you're watching him, but you don't need to trade for a hitter if Christian Yelich's MVP card comes out of your pack right now. That's a legit pickup.
Yeah. Christian Yelich and Brandon Woodruff, who both had great offensive postseasons that year in 2018. Woodruff homered again. And Eric Kratz, who also had a very good 2018 postseason. It was a very fun time for Brewers fans. A lot of great memories, and definitely encourage you to pick up The Tao of the Backup Catcher. A lot of cool stories in there. Great background about him growing up in Pennsylvania. Mennonites. That your father is a super interesting part of this book. There's just a lot. So definitely encourage. Thank you so much, Eric, for joining me. I really, really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me.